So Walt Disney World has 80,000 cast members. Like a day like today, between guests and cast members, there's a quarter of a million people at Walt Disney World today. Disney spends a lot of time to make sure that the casting of a person in a role in a show is, in fact, solid.
Hello, and welcome to Love as a Business Strategy, a podcast that brings humanity to the workplace. We're here to talk about business, but we want to tackle topics that most business leaders tend to shy away from. We believe that humanity and love should be at the center of every successful business. I am your host, Jeff Ma, and as always, I'm here to have conversations and hear stories about real people, real businesses in real life. I have an extra co-host with me today, and you may remember him from past episodes, and you may recognize him as my co-author of our best-selling book, Love is a Business Strategy. Frank Dana is here. Frank, how's it going, my man?
It's going exceedingly well today, Jeff.
Oh, really? You seem
Yep.
to be in a really good mood.
Really, really stoked about today's conversation.
Okay, well, some of you
Yeah.
might be wondering why Frank is here, because he's never here, but the fact is that he is the one who introduced and invited our guest today, and he's possibly the biggest fan amongst anyone that I personally know of today's topic. And so he'd pretty much kill me if I didn't invite him to this episode. And so without further ado, it's an honor to introduce our guest. George A. Calogrides is a distinguished C-suite executive whose remarkable 50-year career at a Fortune 100 company that some of you may have heard of has set a new standard in the hospitality and entertainment industry. George's journey with Disney began at the tender age of 17 as a busser at Disney's Contemporary Resort, and he rose through the ranks to become a pivotal leader in the company. As the president of Walt Disney World Resort, George spearheaded some of the most ambitious projects in Disney's history. His leadership was instrumental in the transformation of Disney Springs and the launch of innovative services like Disney Skyliner and My Magic Plus. George's team also introduced a myriad of new attractions, rides, and shows, significantly enhancing the guest experience and driving an impressive $13 billion in revenue. George's impact extended globally as he led Disneyland Paris through its 15th anniversary and later as he explored new frontiers with the Disney Institute and National Geographic Live, where he focused on educational outreach and environmental stewardship. A celebrated leader, George has received numerous accolades, including the highest honor from Disney, a dedicated window on Main Street at the Magic Kingdom, and the Lifetime Achievement Award from Out and Equal. His leadership has not only left an indelible mark on Disney, but also on the countless lives he has touched through his commitment to excellence and inclusion. And I'm really excited to dive into this incredible story. So please welcome George Calogrides to the show. Hello, George.
Gentlemen, nice to see you both.
George, yeah, very excited to be here.
Frank, I'll give you an
Yeah.
opportunity to speak right up front about just briefly about why you're so excited to have George here on the show.
Well, I had the honor of meeting George a few weeks ago at an event that we were both doing some keynoting at. George had a fireside chat the day of the keynote, the leadership summit that was hosted by EANE, and myself and our other co-author, Mohammed. And Lydia had a chance to do the closing keynote. And the night before, we had a dinner with George, and I was somehow sneakily positioned to sit next to George to have a conversation. Shout out to John, and had a great discussion with George about his experiences in rising through the ranks in Disney and what that looked like. And there are so many takeaways, so many elements of alignment when it comes to what it looks like to bring humanity back to the workplace in creating an environment that is really transforming people's experiences from 1 minute living in the essentially the real world to this entirely new magical experience. And it takes a tremendous impact and effort to be able to pull that off successfully every single day. And so to speak with George about this was an honor, and I thought it would be fantastic to bring you into our conversation inside of Love as a Business Strategy, because I reckon there's a lot of love when it comes to Disney.
I'm sure there is, and I think that's why the cast, as we call them, stay so long. You know, the number of attendees, for example, at Walt Disney World at the Service Awards dinners, which happen on your 5-year service anniversaries, you know, you'll have 15,000 people plus their guests. I mean, it's amazing. So I'd say there's a lot of love for sure. And
yeah, take it away, Jeff.
Frank, that's all you get to speak for the rest of the show. Okay.
That was no, it. I want more.
No, we want to hear from George. Now, George, obviously a lot. I couldn't even cover all of your accomplishments, your achievements in the introduction. And I wanted to kind of hear from you, though. It's been a storied, an incredible career. But what stands out to you is, like, what are you most proud of in your accomplishments and what you've achieved, and why?
You know, this question came up in the session that Frank attended. And I think if I look back, one of the things that I was very fortunate, I was able to work with some of the individuals that Walt handpicked to open Walt Disney World. So when you think about it, we would actually sit in a room. And at this point, I'm, you know, a busboy or a server, but the stories were still handed down no matter what your role. And the explanation of this is what Walt was thinking when he talked about this. And he really, you know, the separation, for example, at Walt Disney World of the parking area from the main entrance, which at Disneyland early days until Disney's California Adventure opened, the parking lot literally went up to the turnstiles at the main entrance. And so he wanted a separation. And so that's how, you know, it was important that the cast understood why Walt Disney World was developed the way it was, why it was important to leave the real world behind and immerse yourself in this story. And then the stories were all about the different lands or the different parts of Walt Disney World. And so what I'm the most proud about is, I think, if Walt walked into this on stage today, I think he would be blown away by what happened. I think we, you know, is there room for improvement? Of course, there always is. But is what he really wanted, which was for people to be able to come together and enjoy themselves and in a place that's clean and safe and a place that creates memories for millions of people, I think we did it. And so for me, that's something that I think it was, you know, a 50-year career that I have no regrets.
Amazing.
George, were you part of the 50-year anniversary and part of the planning and the experiences through the 50-year anniversary? And if you were, how did it feel to be one of the few cast members that was actually there opening year? Or was it opening day?
Opening, well, there were 26 of us who were there on opening day in the 50-year group. And what was so great is if you, we had, you know, many activities with that group. And what was fascinating was they didn't represent any one major group. They actually, the dispersion across all the fields, well, I mean, I don't know that you could have done it scientifically any better, you know, and some people like myself had been able to work in many different areas. And then these two cast members in particular that I remember, the one lady, she worked in the gift shop at the Contemporary Resort for 50 years. That is the only place she had ever worked. But what was so great and how you take something like that and then make it, you just blow it up. She had her own little area during the 50th anniversary because all of the families that had stayed there all of these years and, you know, somebody came when they were a child and now they're bringing their grandchildren. So all of those people would come in and she knew them. I mean, it was just amazing to watch. And then fast forward to the central shops where there was a gentleman and he hated these breakfasts. He's very, very shy.
Okay.
But we figured out how to get it out of him. So when you'd ask him where he worked, he said, you know, I never really moved more than about 10 feet from this side of my bandsaw to this side of my bandsaw. So he was a carpenter in the central shops. But if you said to him, tell me about some of the things that you've made during your career at Walt Disney World, he would light up and he would tell you about the case good that he made in the Italy pavilion and the design, where the design came from and what it was a replica of. I mean, and with such pride. And so, you know, those are the kinds of things where, you know, where else does that happen? You know, truly. And so for the 50th anniversary, there was a lot of new content, a lot of new products. But what we decided to do was, it really was about Jeff and about Frank and you coming with your families and creating memories and telling stories to your families of when you had come before, because so many millions and millions of people had come over a 50-year period.
Right. And it's interesting, too, thinking about the movement of those two stories in particular, someone who worked, you know, in the contemporary resort and yet built memories with countless thousands and millions of people, and then another person who was responsible for building things that millions had experienced. Their trajectory in the company was, you know, relatively stationary in regards to what they operated in, but yours was, you know, very different. And so between those two kind of spectrums of, hey, being content with staying in one place and also having the flexibility of movement, your story is very different, right? Yeah. You experienced 50 years of the organization, but you did not kind of stay in that one spot. How did Disney help you propel your career and your ability to move forward? What did that look like? And what type of opportunities did you end up having getting to that presidency level?
Well, I think one of the things that for me was fortuitous was because I started when Walt Disney World started, and I started college right when Walt Disney World opened. So I graduated 4 years after we had opened. And by then the company was fairly confident, okay, this project's gonna work. And by then Space Mountain had opened. So in Space Mountain for the company was a really pivotal experiment, because it was something that was created not using anything that you typically would use in terms of consumer feedback. So and I remember Dick Nunes, who was the first president, who was responsible actually for getting Walt Disney World open. And he said, do you think in a focus group that anybody would have ever said, we would love to see a roller coaster that's inside a dark enclosed building? He said, you're never going to see that. He said, that's why the Imagineers and coming up with ideas that nobody's ever come up with, that's so important. Then you take that idea and you test it with the guests. But the idea itself did not emanate from a focus group. It came out of a group of creative geniuses who have that ability and a playground to be able to throw out, you know, new ideas. So for me, being able to then sort of the opportunities presented themselves from a timing standpoint, just as my career was launching. And so it doesn't work that way necessarily for everybody, but it can happen oftentimes in a startup like your organization, where somebody may come as the organization is just beginning. And then as the organization grows, that provides opportunities. And if you're in the right spot in your career, then you can sort of ride the wave, so to speak. And I was able to do that.
I'm curious, I think, as we talk about these experiences, these stories, you know, I think it's no secret that, like, the way Disney treats guests, the way that cast members kind of present themselves and endear themselves to millions around the world, it's no secret. That's a well-known thing that happens at Disney. But I want to hear a little bit more from your perspective, George, around how, I guess, cast members treat each other, or I guess what the culture amongst, like, kind of Disney is like in order to achieve that, right? Like, in order to get people to a place where they are putting that much into their love for the guests. How is that? What does that look like behind the scenes with the cast members?
Well, you know, you would think with, so take Walt Disney World. So Walt Disney World has 80,000 cast members. So that's more than a lot of small cities.
Just that one, the one park, Walt Disney World.
Right. Yeah. And on any given day, like a day like today, between guests and cast members, there's a 250,000 people at Walt Disney World today.
It's unbelievable.
So, but it doesn't make any difference because you as a guest, your interaction with a cast member has to be great. And that cast member's interaction with a fellow cast member, to your question, Jeff, has to also be great. Disney spends a lot of time to make sure that the casting of a person in a role in a show is in fact solid. So it's not as if everybody who walks in that's healthy gets hired. You can have a lot of really great people, but a Disney theme park may not be the right place for them to interact. And so, and there could be somebody, for example, who's very talented, but very shy. And that's okay. It doesn't mean there's not a role for them, but it's probably not in a face-to-face guest interaction role. So the formula is more about understanding the role that you're interviewing somebody for and making sure that person understands it, and then probing questions to help understand, you know, if the interviewer believes that this individual will be successful in that role. So then if you follow that formula, over time, you have a collection of people who are all hired and are basically good at what they were hired to do. And so the likelihood of them then getting along much better together is greater, as opposed to you're just hiring people to fill a slot and you end up with people who don't like their job, which then almost by definition, they're not going to necessarily be happy working with anybody, much less, right. You know. Right. And even worse, if it's somebody who actually does like their job. So, and I think in the Disney formula, hiring people to the best of our ability for the right role in the show is one of the key success factors.
I was going to say, it sounds very mission oriented, right? Like the mission of the organization is very clear and the outcomes are very clear, but I had a specific instance I want to ask you about. In September of 2019, my family and I visited Walt Disney World for the first time, and we were at Hollywood Studios, walking in between Toy Story Land, and there's an area where there's like a sort of a Pixar area set up. And my son was 5 at the time, and he was already kind of tired. It was probably 2-3 p.m. in the afternoon, and some of the characters came out. Some of the Incredibles characters, and Frozone came out along with a few other characters. And my son was kind of like standing over in a corner, and he was kind of like a little bit grumpy. You know, I'll be honest with you. He's a kid trying to regulate emotions, and he doesn't realize he's in Disney World. And so I'm like, it's Disney World, man. What are you doing? And Frozone came over to my son. He grabbed a ball, like the Pixar ball, off of one of the, there was an area where they were selling the Pixar balls. He came over to my son. He started playing catch with him, like bouncing the ball back and forth and then tossing it to him. And he was doing dribble moves and then pretending to alley-oop into, you know, and this was so unexpected and it's so magical in that moment. And my son completely forgot his exhaustion. And for like 3 minutes or so, they were just playing ball together. Yeah. And I'm wondering from your perspective, is there latitude given to the cast members? And if so, can you share some of those experiences of how you help the cast members open up to the situational awareness and the emotional connection of being able to provide those magical experiences that may not be written inside of a manual per se? Yeah. How do you help train people to recognize those particular instances that had a profound impact on me and was a great memory for him?
I would tell you the most important way to do that is to listen like I just listened to you, because I know now the impact that that had. So imagine over 50 years, if all of us as leaders were good at listening to our guests, we would make sure that our cast members knew that that latitude, that ability to seek out a child who perhaps is not as engaged as everybody else is critical. And here's how that can turn that entire family's situation around. And so, you know, again, it's not rocket science. In this case, mm-hmm. it's just, and I would hope that anybody would listen to their guests or their customers. I mean, that's important. But then the next thing is, do you do anything about it or are you just listening? And so I think at Disney, one of the things that we have a very good feedback loop that's continuous. And so we, you know, we listen to guests in face-to-face conversations. There are obviously ways that guests can send feedback to us in written format. And it, all of that information is in fact shared down to the frontline level so that everybody does understand here's what you can do. Here's, you know, you have the latitude to do things like that.
That's amazing. Shifting gears a little bit, George, I really wanted to make sure we had time to talk about kind of your contributions and your passion around like diversity, equity, inclusion, and things like that. Can you speak a little bit about your passion in it and your role around it and for all of us, please?
Sure. Well, to begin with, I think that I was very fortunate to work for a company that very much was moving with society as people's perceptions of either sexualities, all the kinds of things, the different dimensions of diversity. So for me, as an openly gay executive, you know, it was the kind of thing where I didn't lead with that, but I also didn't hide that. And the company was incredibly supportive of asking me, offering me opportunities. And there was this pivotal moment, though, that really sent that message. And it's what changed me in terms of becoming someone who was doing my job to somebody who was going to make sure that I led by example. And this was in the late 90s, and it was at, I was the vice president of Epcot. And there was every year what were called Gay Days at Walt Disney World. It wasn't a Disney sponsored event. And it was something actually that was an organic movement from gay annual pass holders that became this huge event. And today it's a huge event still. But at the time, there was a group of people who were very much against any type of support of LGBTQ plus people. And so they were flying airplane banners and, you know, the whole thing was, you know, don't allow gay days, all of this kind of thing. So anyway, we have this meeting that during that time that I'm invited to with all of key executive leaders, like I was the lowest level. And we're listening to the chairman talk about future plans and things like that. And all of a sudden, the president of Walt Disney World at the time came over to me and he said, could you step outside for just a minute? So I go outside and the executive responsible for human resources was also standing outside and public relations. So this is never, this could, you know, okay.
That's a, right. That's a trifecta.
And so they said, we want you to know that security, the internet was new at this point, but it was there. And they said, security has seen online that you have been outed, but more concerning is that they have given people where your office is and with instructions to go and harm you, physically harm you. And so what he said at that point was what changed everything. He said, first of all, you need to know that you will always have the support of this company. Always. You don't ever need to worry about that. Your lifestyle is not, you know, we hired you for what you do. Your lifestyle is your choice. And then he said, but what we are going to have to do at this point is there's going to have to be a sheriff outside of your office for a period of time, because we want to make sure nothing does happen to you. So the fact that, you know, he said it, the first statement, that for me was, you can't imagine as a gay man at that time, how freeing that is. But then I'm go back to the office where, okay, there's going to be a policeman standing outside the office. So you're probably going to have a few conversations. But the reality is, and this is what was so great, and when I pulled everybody together to try to explain what was going on, they said, you know, George, you don't waste your time. We know that's not the issue. You know, we just want to make sure you're okay, kind of thing. So from that point on, I realized that there are, just like in any organization, there are people with different dimensions of diversity. It could be a disabled dimension. It could be sexual orientation, could be anything. But in this case, I was an executive that was out, and it was important to make sure that people knew that that was okay in our company, that you could be yourself, and not by riding on parade floats and things like that, but by making sure that you were available to talk to people, that if somebody reaches out to you and needs to talk, by hosting roundtables, by representing the company at Out and Equal, which was a workplace advocacy nonprofit, those kinds of things. And that's, you know, so that's where my passion definitely has began. But what I have learned over time is the different dimensions of diversity. That's what makes a company rich. You know, truly, it's not just about sexual orientation. There are just so many more dimensions. And if we take the time to learn and listen from our coworkers, I think, you know, every company would be better for sure if they do that. But you as an individual are so enriched by just learning that little piece about somebody that you had no idea before, you know.
That's an amazing story. And, you know, I'm again, it goes back to the characteristics of an organization that truly cares for its people and loves its people and is supportive of who you are. A lot of folks inside of organizations like to talk about creating a sense of belonging, George. I know that I've used that phrase before. I'm guilty of it. And I think a sense of belonging is good, but in reality, what you experienced was real belonging, mm-hmm. where people took the time to showcase to you the value of your worth as a human being.
Right.
And when you have that belonging, you create this relationship, this bond that's really hard to break. And usually it requires a vulnerability and a learning of someone who's deeper than just the surface level. And so the fact that you were able to be shown that, that belonging has continued through into the point now where you're an advocate of and a supporter of belonging inside of any organization is what it sounds like.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, something happened during COVID that really changed, I think, Disney's, the way diversity and inclusion was shared. And so there was an executive committee of leaders that were part of the diversity inclusion executive committee. And so I think there were 40 of us all from all over the world. And so each of us were asked to host a diversity coffee chat twice a month, 20 people in each chat. And so for the first time ever, any employee in the company, anywhere in the world, could sign up. So our names would go on the list on a certain date, and you could just sign up. And then my job was I would get the topics each month that the company wanted us to talk about. And there were, you know, message points of these are, this is the company's perspective or whatever the issue might be. But I'm telling you, that changed everything, because the only thing you saw on the Zoom was the person's name. You had no idea what their title was. So somebody could be a housekeeper in a hotel, and somebody else could be a senior vice president in India on Star TV. And you had no idea, other than you knew this person may live in another country. And so the ability to have, you talk about breaking down barriers. I mean, because you didn't know, and because you joined that coffee chat because you wanted to be there. And right. So people tend to be very engaging, very interactive. But what you watched was people also naturally share time. We knew that it was for 90 minutes. So people made sure that everybody had time to talk. And then what for me, I was able to do is usually each session, there would be one or two people that you could tell by watching their face that either they needed a little bit more help or somebody to reach out. And so I would always just reach out afterwards and just send a note and just say, you know, thanks for joining us today. You know, if there's ever anything you need to talk about, don't hesitate to reach out. And about 100% of the time they would reach out, kind of thing. And yeah, in some cases it was a simple kind of thing, and in others it was really complicated. And but at least they knew that there was somebody that would try to then help partner and navigate them, because when you work in a big company, it's not always so easy. And these topics are not, you just to pick up the phone and call somebody you don't know is not easy either. And so it was great to be able to help, you know, match them with a department or an individual who would actually be able to help them. So that was really an amazing opportunity.
George, I'm going to have to start considering extending our episode durations. We are suddenly at time and there's still so much to explore, but I really appreciate you taking the time today to come and chat with us about your story, about Disney, about the incredible behind the scenes kind of experiences and just your passion. So thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate the invitation. Yeah. Thank you so much. And best of luck to both of you.
Thank you. George, before we go, I want to just ask you, what's your favorite classic Disney attraction and your favorite modern Disney attraction? And by modern, I mean within the past, let's say, 4 years.
So I would say classic is It's a Small World. And mostly because during the previews of Walt Disney World, it's the one attraction I went on with my mother. And that's the only attraction we ever went on together. And so I have a special, you know, memory of that. And then I think modern attraction probably has to be Flight of Passage, at least for right now. Again, there'll be more in the years ahead, but I think Flight of Passage at Disney's Animal Kingdom is just incredible.
Yeah, and if you could think about what It's a Small World and that ride compared to Flight of Passage in Animal Kingdom and the difference in technology and all of the amazing advancements, who knows what the next 50 years holds for what the Imagineering and all of the amazing attractions are going to be coming.
Both of those, the themes of both of those are about people being together, you know, understanding one another. The themes of Pandora, the Small World, it's the same message. It's just technology 50 years apart.
Love it.
Incredible.
Fun fact, my first trip with my family, well, when my son was young and my daughter was not yet born, we went to Disney, and It's Small World was one of the few things he was qualified to do, but also all he wanted to do. So I spent an entire day at Disney rewriting Small World roughly 7 times. I think we went 7 times. And by the end, I was, no offense, I love it, but I was about done. That song was stuck in my head.
Now it's in my head.
There you go.
But it's great. All right, Frank, thanks for joining us. It was good having you. Hope to see you in future episodes more often. You know what I'm saying?
You got it,
man. And George, once again, thank you so much. To our audience, thank you so much for listening and tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this interview. And in the future, please do like, subscribe, and tell a friend. And go get the book, Love is a Business Strategy, still out there. All right, with that, Thank you, everybody, and we hope you have a magical week.